Welcome to the Dermatology Interest Group Association podcast, or DIGA podcast, where we talk about everything from how to become a stellar dermatology applicant to interesting topics in dermatology.
From research advice to interviewing tips, you will be prepared to follow the path to become a world-class dermatologist.
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I'm your host, Austin Black, and today we are joined by Dr. Adarsh McGill, better known as The Doc on social media. Dr. McGill is a New York City-based dermatologist and dermatopathologist who over the past 5 years has established himself as a prominent face in the realm of dermatology on social media. In today's episode, we talk with Dr. McGill about everything from how he came to pursue a career in dermatology to tattoos, self-development and improvement, and everything in between. With that being said, I'll see you on the skin side. All right, everyone, welcome back to the podcast. We're super excited today to have Dr. Adarsh Vijay McGill with us, or Dr. McGill, or The Doc, as you might be familiar with him on some of the social media platforms. So we just want to say a big thank you for joining us today, Dr. McGill.
Pleasure to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Would you mind introducing yourself a little bit to our listeners, for maybe those who aren't super familiar with kind of who you are and what you stand for?
Sure. Well, if you're not, follow me on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. I'm pretty much it's pretty much an open window into who I am in my life. But I'm a New York City-based dermatologist. I'm board certified in dermatology and dermatopathology. My practice is in New York City on Lower Fifth Avenue, kind of where I always dreamed of practicing. I also have a practice out in Long Island where I live now with my family. But I spend most of my time in my New York City office. I do a lot of, obviously I'm a dermatologist, so my professional life is a big part of my life, but you know, as my social media, really what inspired my social media, it's been like now like 5 years hardcore, is more like a lot of mindset, motivational stuff as well, just sort of lessons I've learned in my life. You know, I came from pretty humble roots and so achieved things I never quite dreamed of as being possible. And you know, my platform really is, if I could do it, I think anybody can, as long as you're willing to hustle and grind for it. And you know, so it's a mishmash of stuff, but it's a pretty good glimpse into who I am as a person. So check it out if you don't.
Yeah, definitely take a look at that, and we'll plug in all of his social medias in the show notes for us today. But like you mentioned, you're a dermatologist, but it's not just derm stuff that you post. It's kind of a lot of motivational things, kind of life practice or life tip ideas. So definitely a good variety of things to kind of intertwine with your other dermatology followers that you might already have on social media and kind of spice things up a little bit for us. So going back, entering into med school, a young Dr. McGill, or a soon to be Dr. McGill, was dermatology ever on the radar from the start? Was it all you wanted to do? How did you find dermatology?
That's a good question. Not really. I went to a dermatologist occasionally when I was a kid, you know, for acne and stuff. But interestingly, when I started med school, dermatology wasn't on my radar at all. I actually wanted to be an obstetrician. I always hate to say it, but because of the Cosby Show, that was before Bill Cosby went down in flames. But you know, I come from a family of doctors. My mom was an internist. She worked for the VA hospital. It was like a colonel in the Army Reserves. My brother, who's 7 years older than me, he was at that time, I think he was either a fellow or a resident, or maybe he's an attending in ophthalmology. He's a pediatric ophthalmologist. So they were basically, you know, telling me like, well, you've really picked a very hard lifestyle field. If you want to be an obstetrician, maybe you should consider these other fields. But coincidentally, like around the same time, so back when I was going to med school, it was like 1997 when I started medical school, there were no cell phones at that time. So I was a very strong student, but I was also a very lazy student, and I applied to medical school pretty late. I was on literally, I think like 8 waiting lists to get into medical school. So in my mind, I was like, all right, you know, if I don't get in this time around, I'll just apply next time. I wasn't worried about getting into medical school. It was just a matter of like, it's all rolling admissions. And I was like, all right, you know, whatever, I'll just take a year off and go to med school next year. But during that time, it was the summer before med school started. So it was the summer of 97 when I graduated college. I was driving around. I flew out to Denver. My best friend in college lived in Denver. And we did this like massive tour, like through Yellowstone and up to the Canadian Rockies and over to Vancouver and then down the West Coast. It was like this 3-week trip. And every now and then I would check in with my mom to see, you know, hey, I'm still alive and everything's okay, but did anyone call me for med school? So I actually got into Mount Sinai off the waiting list, but because it's rolling admissions and Mount Sinai started pretty early, my mom's like, you know, you better call Mount Sinai. You got in. So I called them. Of course, my spot, they gave my spot away. And it was starting to become a very stressful period. And I got this rash called lichen planus, which is like this, like, no one really knows what causes it. It's like this autoimmune rash, probably something viral. But I had like this little itchy spot in my leg. And I was like, oh, shit, that itches a lot. And, you know, ultimately, I got into Stony Brook, where I went to medical school. It was like right when I actually got back to Denver. So my mom was very happy. But by that time, the rash was kind of contained to my leg. But once I started medical school, med school is like pretty intense when you start it. The rash like spread like wildfire, like all over me. And I had like, you know, so my mom, who was an internist, this was actually right before I started medical school. I had this rash. My mom took me to the VA hospital and said, hey, you know, she took me to the phlebotomy lab and she started ordering all of these tests, which now I know are all STD tests. It was like the test for like syphilis and all this other stuff. And I was like, you know, and when I started medical school, I was like, mom, oh my God, how could you do that? You know, but it turns out I had this thing called lichen planus, not an STD, but I did go to my childhood dermatologist who like, you know, gave me some prednisone and the rash went away. And that's when I actually first started thinking about dermatology. Like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. Dermatology is a very sequestered field. Like, you're not really exposed to it in medical school, particularly in like the first 2 years, unless you really seek it out. And then coincidentally, like during medical school, we had this like, it was almost like this like ethics class where there'd be like 10 students. My med school class had 100 people that split up in 10 groups. And it was the moderators of that group were a doctor and like some other like healthcare administrator. So the doctor actually happened to be a dermatopathologist. And I had this rash that my dermatologist helped me with. This moderator of this group was like a dermatopathologist. He was a cool guy. So I asked him if I could spend the summer with him between first and second year. And that's when I first got really exposed to like dermatology and dermatopathology. And then I really got intrigued with it. And part of the intrigue is like dermatology is like impossible to get into. And you know, you have to be like, you know, super top notch. And I'm a pretty competitive guy. So I was like, you know, I think dermatology, I'm going to go for dermatology. So then the ball started rolling. And then I started to get involved more with the department. I actually took a year off to my second or third year medical school, did a Howard Hughes fellowship. And I worked I did some skin cancer research. And then, you know, the rest is history.
Cool. Yeah. So like you mentioned, maybe applying to med school, you'd been to a dermatologist as a kid, but like weren't really exposed to it, and almost the stress of that process of getting into med school kind of initially sparked your interest in dermatology and led from there.
Truthfully, I wasn't that stressed about it, but my mom was really stressed, which got me really stressed out.
Started running all these tests on the lab downstairs. That's funny. Oh, that's cool. And then you had that cool exposure to DermPath, which you also mentioned is something that you do. And for our listeners, kind of the fellowship opportunities within dermatology are really vary from dermatopathology all the way to cosmetics, Mohs surgery, pediatrics, any of those. And so Dr. McGill chose to do dermatopathology, and you had that exposure, it sounds like, kind of second, third year where you got that initial interest in DermPath. So did you know going into derm residency, like, hey, I want to do DermPath as well? Or was that kind of something you found even more interest for during your training and then decided to pursue a fellowship?
No, I was always interested in it. So I knew from the beginning I was going to do DermPath, which I still do, you know, but I'm also like, I do everything. So I have a, you know, clinical practice, and, you know, DermPath is part of what I do, but I do enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I'm one of the rare few that do. Like, most derm residents absolutely hate DermPath. It's like the nerdiest part of dermatology, but I always liked it.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Did you ever consider doing the pathology route to DermPath if you knew that that was kind of your end goal in a way?
Nah, I have like zero interest in actual path. Like, it's kind of gross. Even like in DermPath, like fellowship, you have to do like some general path, which I absolutely hated. Yeah. I actually hated anatomy lab. Like dissected the cadaver. I found it so disgusting. Like, I had zero interest in pathology.
Strictly a DermPath guy. I get you.
Yeah.
Cool. So you mentioned you do both DermPath, dermatology. Kind of just a question I had, do you read your own slides or is that something?
I do. Yeah. So I always read my own slides, you know, since I started my practice. I used to have someone process my slides for me because it was very small volume, but now I have a full service lab. I read for my own patients. I also read for a bunch of derms in the city. You know, I have a courier running around picking up specimens and we process our slides overnight and have like a full DermPath operation.
Cool. So do you process other providers' specimens as well? That you mentioned?
Yeah, it's a full reference laboratory.
Cool. How do you balance that schedule? I know some people do DermPath like 2-3 days a week or vice versa, or like mornings are DermPath, afternoons are Derm. Kind of what's your balance with that?
I'm very efficient. So when I was starting my dermatology practice, I was actually, I'll backtrack. So when I finished my DermPath fellowship, I was working for a big lab called DermPath Diagnostics, and that's called something else now, I think. But I think it's still called DermPath Diagnostics, and they're this like nationwide company. They had a lab in Westchester County, which is pretty close to Manhattan. And I was working for them 3 days a week doing DermPath, and then 2 days a week I was seeing patients in the city. And my plan was to like do that for a couple of years and then kind of, you know, start my own practice. But one of my attending, who actually knew when I was applying for derm residency, he wasn't an attending at Mount Sinai where I did my residency, but through the interview process, he was attending at SUNY Downstate. And I just really liked him. You know, we just kind of connected. He was a DermPath. And he was one of my mentors when I was a fellow, and then one of the guys who owned the lab that I was working at. And a few, probably about like 10 months working in that lab, he basically shot himself in the foot, but like he did it with the kindness of his heart. There was an opportunity for me to read slides for a private group. Their DermPath was leaving, and you know, that a huge volume was like 20,000-25,000 biopsies a year. So he's like, hey man, this is probably a good opportunity for you for your life. Maybe it's a bad thing for me because we want you to work here, but you know, I think it's something you should explore. So after working at DermPath for 10 months, I actually left. And when I was around Memorial Day, and I started reading slides for this group that was based in Long Island. And then, so I was like the lab director. They were processing slides in-house, but they had so much volume. It was just, you know, there wasn't really enough. It was a full-time job. So what I would do is, you know, we actually rented a summer house in Long Beach in Long Island, which is on the beach, with a bunch of my friends from high school who I was still really close with. And, you know, I had my daughter was born at the time. She was like, not even, maybe like 11 months old or something. And they had a little office in that house. So I set up a microscope in that office, and I'd literally, they had so much volume. I'd read slides from like 8 a.m. till 6 o'clock at night on Saturdays and Sundays. And then I'd like hang out with everybody. Then I would catch up on all the volume during the week. And around that time, I was like, I'm going to open my own practice. So I had a whole bunch of moving parts going on. So really working for them, and I worked for them for a pretty long time. They got bought up by private equity, which I had like no interest in working for. The, you know, it just wasn't, you know, it's not what medicine should be. And I'll speak about that on a separate podcast, but they're basically destroying medicine, like private equity and hospital groups. So, but because I worked for them and I also had my practice at the time, which is becoming a busy clinical practice. And then I started my own lab. I was working like three jobs. I became very efficient. So I was reading like probably like 35,000-40,000 biopsies a year. So I became like very efficient. So going to now, like, so what I do is I drop my son off at school. Usually it's, you know, pretty early, he's in middle school. I'll read my slides I can read a lot of slides in a very short amount of time. And I have like a very streamlined operation. And then after that, I work out for a couple of hours. I have my post-workout meal, a shower. Then I go to my Manhattan office to see patients. And then I do that. I read slides Monday, Wednesday, Friday generally. But I have like down to a pretty like perfect system.
Yeah. So lots of moving parts, it sounds like, to kind of end up where you are now, so to speak.
Yeah, but you have to go through that. So it's kind of, you know, like all that hustle, which was like insane. I was working 7 days a week for a very, very long time. But it enabled me to like, you know, to benefit from the efficiencies that created. Like now it's like, even though I do so much shit, like, you know, with social media and like, my practices and all that stuff, I still feel like there's the times of the day where I'm just like twiddling my thumbs, like, oh shit, I really should be doing something productive right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And looking back, it's like those moments where you didn't have any time in the day that you wish you did to twiddle your thumbs, where you learn the skills from that. And now you're grateful for that because you have time to spend with family, doing hobbies, whatever else it might be.
Yeah.
Cool. So starting your own practice, I know that there's kind of the two routes you can take coming out of residency fellowship, kind of the academic route, the private practice route, I guess three, like you could start your own practice or go into a group of practice that's already established. It sounds like you did a little bit of both. Kind of you had that derm path where you were with a group, with like a larger corporation, and then starting your own practice. Did you ever have any interest in like doing strictly academics? Did you know you always wanted to do private practice and have your own thing? How did you end up doing what you're doing now in that sense?
Yeah, so I always do. I've always been like very entrepreneurial since I was like 8 years old. I knew I could only work for myself ultimately. So I did work for a derm group, like a very small derm group, while I was working for DermPath Diagnostics. And, you know, it was, the doctors were great, and it was a great experience. It's just the office wasn't like what I envisioned myself working in, you know. I always wanted like a very sleek, modern office. You know, just like certain things that bothered me. And what I thought was going to be 2 years actually lasted like 10 months, just because we ended fine. There was like no hostility or anything like that. But it's an opportunity came for me to, like, you know, buy some property and start my own office. And, you know, I mean, my wife has actually, you know, really encouraged me to take the plunge. If it weren't for her, I probably wouldn't have done it at the time I did. But yeah, I took the plunge a lot sooner than I thought I would, but very deep into debt doing it. and it was very scary for me. but yeah, my wife really kind of, you know, kudos really go to her for me doing it when I did it. And, you know, I'm very grateful that I did it when I did it, because, you know, it worked out.
Yeah. In hindsight, it all worked out perfectly. But at the time, I'm sure you were stressed beyond all belief.
Yeah, I sure was.
So kind of with DermPath, and then with DermPath, is there like a certain condition or biopsy type that like you see under the microscope and it just makes you excited, like a certain diagnosis to give, I guess?
Not really. I mean, I still get excited when I like start my day reading slides. It's just something about it. Just kind of fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, DermPath, it's when you do it for like a pretty long time, it gets like pretty easy and it's kind of fun. It's like just hitting layups, like, you know, like it's just fun. It's just like you just get this constant gratification. I mean, there are hard cases, and like, you know, you have to know when you don't know stuff, and you know, I'll send cases out for a second opinion, you know, or I mean, usually when I send it for a second opinion, I know what it is. It's just that I want someone else to say, hey, you're right. They are, or it's like some terrible melanoma or something like that, mm-hmm. that you just wanted to know the name on. But like DermPath for me is just, it's just fun. Like, you know, like I can read like 100 slides in like an hour. It's, you know, it's just a good way to start my day. It's like, it's almost like doing a Wordle. You know, like this. It just gets my brain going.
Yeah. What about clinically? Is there like a condition or procedure that you like to treat clinically that you like, you're really excited about?
Not really. I mean, listen, all of the practice of medicine, itself gets pretty mundane after a while. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm like, oh, I'm so excited. This procedure. At the beginning, sure, there was like cool, like a laser thing. I was like, oh, this is so exciting. Now it's just like everything's just like, in terms of like the work, is like whatever. It's like, you know, it's just second nature. But yeah, the gratification is from the patients. It's like from the personal interactions that you make and the connections you make. That's really fun. That's what, you know, that's why I went into, you know, a field where you see patients. But like I said, for any doctor, it could be whatever you do. Even if you're like a cardiothoracic surgeon, it's like everything's like kind of pretty routine after a while. You're just doing the same sort of stuff over and over again. It's cool and I enjoy it. Like, you know, but it's like I said, it's kind of like hit layups.
Yeah.
You know, the actual work of dermatology.
Right, right. And you've seen it all. You've made enough layups from different sides of the hoop, so yeah, to speak, that you kind of have had those moments of excitement on the initial presentation of something you hadn't seen before.
I mean, at this stage of my career, I'm like Steph Curry. I'm hitting threes with blindfold on. You
know? Half court shots before you go back to the locker room.
Yeah, but I mean, cool. Everyone gets to that. It's not, you know, just you do it enough, get enough reps, and you get pretty good at it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like you mentioned, cardiothoracic surgery or neurosurgery. It's kind of like from the outside looking in, you're like, man, these guys, they got to be so stressed all the time doing these crazy operations. And to them, it's, they wake up, go to work, do the same thing. Granted, a little bit different here and there, but then they go home and it's not so much different than another person's job. But they kind of wake up and do 9 to 5 every day, and we might look at and think there's no way we could ever do that. So everyone kind of has their niche and finds how they do it best. And it becomes a perfecting practice as you go along the way. So I saw on your website, kind of in preparation for this today, you have the private practice doing the derm path, but you also hold an academic position at Mount Sinai. Kind of what is your role there? I think it's a little bit unique and I haven't seen it too often where there's a private practice dermatologist who has an academic position, kind of at a teaching hospital and med school.
So most of us I trained at Sinai. So most of us stay on board and we like teach a resident clinic, like a half a day a month. It's nothing, you know, it's not a huge commitment. So I go like the second Monday of every month and it's the residence clinic and I just see patients with the residents, you know, say, hey, yeah, it's the right way or the wrong way to do it this way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been doing it for like, God, since like 2006.
Okay. just kind of a way to keep yourself in the program a little bit and give back.
Yeah.
Interact with the residents.
Yeah. Sort of. I mean, at this point, it's kind of like, you know, in the beginning, it was like you were seeing residents that you knew that were just a couple years younger than you. Now it's like, you know, it's funny because I think about it. I'm like, wow, I'm that old attending that like, they have no, you know, they don't have any idea who I am, you know. But yeah, it's fun. For me, it's also more some of my buddies from residency, we do it together. So it's like a good social thing for us. Like, you know, we go out and get drinks after or get dinner and it's just, you know, just fun.
Yeah, that is fun. Do you ever have residents come into your practice? Like, do they ever get a private practice experience?
I have a ton of students. So I have residents sometimes from Sinai, but I just have a lot of PA students, college students, I have high school students. You know, we're pretty open to folks that are interested. Well, mostly through social media, like a lot of people reach out to me to shadow. So we've probably had like, I don't know, 10, 15 students just this summer alone. You know, I have like a little entourage following me around when I'm seeing patients.
Open the door and in comes the doctor, the medical assistant, and three med students behind.
Yeah, that's fun.
That's cool. That's cool that you have that kind of still able to interact with the program. I think that that's a just kind of looking forward into my career. I'm not sure which way I'd want to go, academics or private practice, but knowing that there's kind of a maybe like a, in the middle spot, kind of a in a sense, although it's pretty minimal in the academic setting, but still being able to interact maybe in that teaching manner that I know many of us who are in medicine like to kind of have with our peers.
Yeah.
So one thing just in me following you for a little while and the last couple of years, you've developed a little bit of an interest and started to get some tattoos yourself. And where like derm is so skin related and tattoos obviously skin related. Kind of wanted to get your opinion or perspective on things and maybe some ways in which we as future providers can like help our patients who are getting tattoos or maybe had bad experiences with tattoos and need them removed. Just kind of wanted to get some insight from you in that. So could you give us a little bit of how tattoos work type of a thing? Like how does the actual ink stay in the skin? Where does it go? How does it not move around? Any of those types of things?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, when you get a tattoo, it's basically, it's a foreign body. It's like a foreign pigment that using a fine needle is inserted into the dermis, which is like a layer just before the top layer of your skin. And it sits there and macrophages, which are like these you know, immune cells, kind of chop them up. And a lot of the pigment lives in the macrophage. You know, tattoos can fade over time sometimes. And that's because, you know, the macrophages will digest and alter some of the pigment. But when those macrophages die off, a lot of the pigment stays behind. So, you know, tattoos are permanent because, and they may not permanently look as good as they do when they're fresh, but they're permanent because once that pigment is like implanted in your skin, it just basically lives there. I do tattoo removal also. So, you know, a lot of folks have tattoos of like their ex or something that they don't want. And the way tattoo removal works is basically you're using lasers to target the chromophore that's in the tattoo. So if it's like most tattoos are like darker, so you can use like, you know, whatever, one particular setting, like an NDAG laser to target that tattoo pigment, basically just breaks it up into smaller pieces so that your immune cells can just cart them away and, you know, deal with them. If the tattoo pigment is large, the immune system can't do that. So the goal of like tattoo removal is you basically shatter the pigment using a laser, and then those smaller particles are much easier digested by your immune cells. Some certain color tattoos require special lasers. But yeah, tattoo removal is a huge thing. Even for tattoo artists who are more or less generally like covered in tattoos, even they get like tattoo removal with laser and then redo tattoos and stuff. It's something I learned. I actually work pretty closely. There's the tattoo studio that I use is called Bang Bang. You know, Bang Bang is probably like the most famous tattoo artist in the world. And he's got two studios in New York City. And that's where I got my tattoos, but I've actually developed a very close relationship with them and I'm involved in some cool projects with them. I was on a Zoom call before this for like a project that we're working on. So yeah, I'm a big fan of tattoo art. I think it's beautiful, done well. And I'm like lucky to be like working with the best tattoo artists in the world, like doing some other cool stuff. It's fun.
That's cool. Like it's another form of artwork, I guess, that dermatologists can kind of be involved with, because a lot of what they do by nature, what dermatologists do by nature and tattoo artists do by nature is very much artwork kind of on the skin and helping people to feel better about themselves, be more confident, or kind of express their personality in different ways. I know that there's another doc who I follow on social media, but he had and maybe has another tattoo, and it's like a 1 or 2, maybe 3 year tattoo, and then it fades over time.
Ephemeral tattoos, yeah.
So is that just like, obviously it's a different type of ink. Do you know how that works, the process?
Yeah, it's basically ink made out of suture material. They are getting a little bit of, if there was an article in New York Times about how like a lot of some of the ephemeral tattoos start looking very weird over time as they get digested. So I can't tell you guys too much, but you know, we're working on something much cooler.
Cool. So it's the ones today are, it's a suture material that kind of just like sutures do, dissolve over time and then eventually just go away altogether.
Yeah, but it can, so originally they were supposed to go away, it was like an X number of months. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them are persisted beyond that, and like they just look, it, and you should actually, there's this article in New York Times, you should check it out, it's actually pretty funny.
Okay.
Like,
yeah, someone's got like half a snake that's like dissolved and moved away.
That looks like that looks like a match now or something like that, you know, like it's just it's pretty funny. But yeah, but the concept is, it's a good concept. It's just that you don't really know how things play out unless they're kind of studied for several years. So, but yeah, I think he has an ephemeral tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And it's cool to, I guess, see that they're becoming more mainstay. I wonder in your practice, you said you've been practicing for a little while now. Have you seen tattoos kind of be more accepted, so to speak, or more people having tattoos that are your patients coming in for a treatment?
Yeah. Everyone has a tattoo. Especially in New York City. I know a lot. Yeah. You know, I have a lot of like very notable celebrity patients, and you'd be surprised like how many tattoos some of, like, you know, they're very, very prevalent.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a cool shift. I know that they're, like you mentioned, I think that they're a cool way to express yourself. And if done right, they can look great for many years to come. And if not, you can go see Dr. McGill or someone else to help get a fresh start on those.
Yeah, totally.
So kind of want to shift gears a little bit and get into you and the social media game that you're in, and kind of the different aspects that you're involved in. You mentioned it's been 5 or so years, and I think that that's kind of when I first found you on Instagram. I think it was in early 2019, 2020, somewhere in there. What kind of sparked your interest? Like, what led you to start being like, hey, I want to share not just derm stuff, but kind of my life on social media to hopefully, you know, people find entertainment or enjoyment out of it. What sparked you to do that?
So it's a long answer. So I'm 48 now. When I started posting on social media, probably when I was like 42, I started like thinking about it. You know, so I mentioned I have two offices. At one point I had a bunch of doctors working for me, a couple of PAs. And I was still working hard when I was seeing patients, but I had so much stuff going on that I actually had like a lot of time on my hands. So I'd read slides, and I'd see patients maybe like 1 day a week at that point, maybe 1.5 days a week. And then the rest of it was kind of just like running my business. But I had reached a level, I mean, honestly, I reached a level of success that I never thought was possible. You know, I was actually like living in the neighborhood that I used to be in the service. I was servicing when I was in high school and in college. Like, I valet parked cars at restaurants that I eat at now. Or at the time still, you know, it was just kind of like surreal. And I remember, this is going to sound like really awful, but I remember one morning I was driving in my Ferrari to go play golf at my golf club that I used to valet park cars at. And I remember thinking to myself, like, this was the summer of 2017. I remember thinking to myself, I was like, wow, holy shit. I was 42. I just turned 42. I was like, holy shit, I made it. This is crazy. I can't believe this is my life. And I did that for a few weeks. Like, I was playing a lot of golf at the time. And everyone who was at the golf club, like when I was there, like on a weekday in like the afternoon or like, you know, during work hours, was like an awful human being. You know, like just someone I wouldn't really want to even be friends with. It was just like a lot of really rich, entitled folks who I just found like just not my people. You know, I hustled for everything I had. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like, wow, so a time that should feel so amazing. And like, oh my God, like I've like achieved so much. Was such an empty time for me. I was like, I don't want more of this. Like, this is not, I don't want to open up another practice and have like more of the same. I was like, it was cool for a couple of weeks, but I was like, I don't want my rest of my life to be this. Like, I was like, what, I was 42. It was like literally midlife crisis. I was like, what is the rest of my life going to be? And, you know, it can't be more of this. And I started like really doing a lot of soul searching. I started like, you know, just like reading a bunch. I used to read a lot in college, you know, when I had more time, and even like after that, but I got busy with kids, with work and all that sort of stuff. And I just, I talked to some of my close friends. I had lunch with an entrepreneur, a dinner with an entrepreneur who like I really like and really respect. And I was telling him about like, you know, I feel like I should be feeling so good, but I kind of feel so empty. Like, you know, this can't be like what my life is going to be about. And he said, well, like, you know, like who do you love? Like, what do you love? I was like, I love The Rock. Like, you know, I love how he's transformed himself so many times. And he's like, has this amazing message of positivity and like, you know, hustling and working so hard and achieving things. And he's never satisfied. Like, he was a professional wrestler and was on top of that. Now he's the best actor in the world. And just now he makes tequila. Like, there's always like something that he's working on. And I was like, that's what I want to do. Like, I want to like empower the 8-year-old me. Like, I happened upon it. Like, you know, I was bullied. I lived in a horrible racist town on the South Shore of Long Island. And just like, you know, I wish someone, and it worked out for me. You know, I had great mentors and, you know, great friends and stuff, but had I not, like, I wish there was me telling me that like, hey, you know, you could really do anything you want in this world if you're willing to bust your ass and work for it. So I started, he also turned me on to Gary Vee. So I started like following Gary Vee a little bit. And, I started posting more to social media, but just like, it was like lame content. I didn't really know what to post. I was like, oh, but you know, I'm going to start posting to social media. That was like probably in the very beginning of 2018. And then I went to Gary Vee's 4D session in May of 2018. I met Gary. I talked to him and his team. And, you know, he said, listen, if you have the means to deploy, you should get a videographer. Cause I was like making all the content myself at the time. So I literally put it out on Craigslist. When I walked out of there, I hired a videographer, and then I just started like posting every single day. I've not missed a single day since, like, I think it was like March of 2018. I posted to Instagram every single day. I started posting to TikTok when Gary said, you got to post to TikTok. I have a YouTube channel, a podcast. All the stuff was kind of started around that time. And it's cool because it actually is exactly what I wanted it to be. So I started posting some Pimple Popper content because I posted one video to YouTube and it went like viral. I was like, oh shit. So I would post one video every day of like, I mean, every week, like a Pimple Popper thing, which I could care less about, to be honest with you. And then the other days I'd post like mindset motivational stuff, you know? And I also had like a fitness transformation during this period. There's a whole bunch of shit like that was inspiring me to do this. And one of my followers had the best line. She said, you know, come for the pop, stay for the inspiration. And so that's kind of like a tagline that I use a lot. And this community is just like grown. It's amazing. And so I still kind of have that same model. I post like probably like 50% derm stuff. And then the rest is just like, you know, mindset, motivational type stuff. But, you know, it's really to empower the younger me or the whoever's going through the same struggles I was going through, you know, growing up. That there's this, and I really, it's like, I call myself the doc because of The Rock. It's like, I just think like he's an amazing, empowering human being. And, you know, if I could be a tenth of that to somebody, I'll consider myself successful.
So in a sense, it was kind of yourself that inspired it, kind of your past self. Like if, like you said, someone else who maybe was in your situation that you grew up in, kind of being that mentor that you had as someone growing up through maybe high school, middle school, college, medical school, being that for someone else through that social media platform, and then kind of just sharing yourself in a way. I know like, maybe this is not the right way to think of it, but kind of almost like compounding, like the more you share, the more you're motivated, the more you're driven to go about and do your own, whatever ambitions it is that you have. And like you mentioned, you're always busy, have your hands in multiple pots. And so kind of the more that you share and put out there, the more motivation you have, as well as giving that to other people who are listening to it, watching it, kind of however it is that they obtain what you're sharing. So not just for yourself, but for the followers. And then it kind of gives back in a full circle moment to you and everyone else, and continual community growth is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, listen, for me, it's like nothing gives me more satisfaction than when I get like some random DM from somebody saying, wow, you know, thanks so much for posting that. Like, you'll never know how much that inspired me, you know? Like, that's what keeps me going. That's why I keep doing it, you know? It's literally the best. And I don't get any money. It's like, I'm not getting paid for any. I just do it because I love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. You mentioned this nickname, the Doc, kind of in line with The Rock. Have either of you had a chance to cross paths at all or chat or anything?
It's
like
funny.
That?
We are like kind of like circulate in similar orbits sometimes. Like one of his stylists was my patient, or like someone I know knows him really well, or a patient of mine works for WWE and is like, oh, dude, I could get you to meet The Rock anytime. I still haven't met him. I'd love to meet him. I'm sure he has an inbox full of DMs for me that are just, he's like, who's this stalker? But yeah, man, it'll happen.
Yeah. Who's this guy calling himself The Doc, calling himself The Rock, trying to get a hold of me?
Well, it's funny because everyone knows that I love The Rock. So for my birthday this year, like my staff got me like this full size Rock, like life size, like cardboard cutout. And like they had it sitting behind my desk with all this like Rock inspired, like, you know, cards and stuff like that. Or like last year, my birthday cake, they got me like a Rock, like WWE doll that was on my cake. You know, it's really funny.
Oh, that's fun. They have that kind of tie, and the staff plays into it too. One other thing that I know that you are proud of is you came out with a book. It was probably 2-3 years ago now. You'd know better than I.
Yeah, I think it came out like December 2020, like right in like the heart of the pandemic.
Yeah, right in the peak of that. Yeah. And the book's titled "Let's Get It." I know that that's one of your taglines. One of the things you like to say a lot. Could you kind of give us the backstory maybe behind that phrase and then a little bit of insight into the book itself?
So one of my trainers, so I had like a pretty crazy fitness transformation. I mean, still ongoing, but I had a bet with my brother-in-law it was like Thanksgiving of 2012. And he was like a guy that was like really jacked in his 20s. I was never jacked in my life. I mean, I'm jacked now, but I wasn't jacked back then. And we were sitting on the couch and he had a beer in his belly and I had a scotch on my belly. And he's like, dude, like, what happened to us? We were like in our 30s. And he's like, let's have a bet to see who's going to get in the best shape by Memorial Day. So the best shape by Memorial Day of 2013. So I'm very competitive. Very, very competitive. So I was 196 pounds, 20% body fat. By Memorial Day, I got to 154 pounds, 8% body fat. I'm 6'1", so I literally looked like I was dying, but I was not going to lose this bet. But one of my trainers, and who I'm actually very close friends with now, who's my trainer for years, a guy named Rasan Robinson. He's like seen me from like being like skinny fat to being like skinny and looked like I was dying, now to being like, you know, like a little bit more, having a little bit more of an impressive physique. But one of the things he'd always say, like you know, when we were about to do a set, he'd always say, all right, you know, here we go, bench, let's get it. And he would always say that. So I just started saying that all the time. So it's actually, he started it, but I stole it. But he's gifted it to me. So that's why, yeah. But it's just funny because even one of my buddies sent me an email that he does nothing in medicine. He sent me an email that one of his partners sent, you know, to like kind of motivating all the staff. And on the bottom of it, it said, as so-and-so's close friend says, let's get it. You know, it's everyone knows it's my friend.
It's associated with you. You stole it from the other guy, but he said it's okay, so it's okay.
Yeah.
So the book itself, what is the book? Obviously, Let's Get It's the title. What is it focusing on? Kind of what inspired you to write that?
It's Let's Get It, Hustle and Grind Your Way to Personal Empowerment is like the sort of the subtitle. And that's really what it's all about. It's just literally it's the anecdotes and stories from my life of like, you know, ups that I turned into successes. And you know, it's literally if I can do it, like my fitness transformation was probably the like one of the most important things for me because I was like a skinny fat my whole life. I remember like just even like being in high school or college and like, seeing some like jacked guy in the locker room. I'm like, holy shit, like how do people even look like that? That's crazy. Like, you know, why do I look like this? My wife always says it's funny because when we started dating, like you never want to take your shirt off. And now I can't keep your shirt on you. but literally the fact that I could do that, that I could have that kind of transformation, if my skinny, fat, sorry ass could get into really good shape, like anybody can do it. But the lessons I learned on that journey, it translate into every aspect of life. I started thinking about like, you know, what else have I done that's similar to this? Well, academically, I did it. You know, like there's so many examples of this. Where just by working hard and like, you know, really grinding, we can all achieve these amazing things. I mean, there's so much potential in all of us. It's just most of it just goes untapped, which is so sad. And, you know, like the book is really using like, you know, embarrassing stories about things that happened to me. And, you know, things that I'm really proud of that I was able to accomplish just to like, you know, like those are all true stories. And if I could overcome whatever those obstacles were or achieve the things that I did. I mean, literally anybody can do it if they're willing to work hard enough for it.
That's awesome. It's a little self stories, if you will, kind of showing the ways that you've put your nose to the grindstone and achieved where you're at now, and kind of sharing the maybe the tips and tricks, the strategies, the methods, things you learned along the way, so that those of us who are reading the book and hearing the message you're sharing can try and find some motivation, encouragement, and knowing that if Dr. McGill could go from skinny fat to where he's at now, we can too. And any of the other things that you've accomplished along the way.
Yeah, let's get it.
One area that I feel like you've been focusing a lot on recently, kind of fitting for the conversation today, is your podcast, the Dr. McGill podcast. What is kind of your mission behind that? What do you share on there? Do you have kind of a script to that, or is it all just whatever's on your mind at the moment? Tell us a little bit about that podcast. Yeah.
So actually, we just recorded the 90th episode of my podcast earlier today. So it started out as an interview-based podcast where I'd interview folks who had whose stories I found inspiring that I wanted to share that I thought would inspire others. And a lot, so, you know, in the beginning, it was like what in-person interviews. We set up a little studio in my office on Long Island, and folks would come down, we interview them. During the pandemic, it really flourished because, you know, you couldn't have, you know, in-person interviews. So we had like amazing guests through Zoom. Like I would just DM, like, you know, I just would send out like 50 DMs a night. You know, I'd be sitting on my couch, drinking tequila. I'd just start sending, you know, DMs. So like The Rock or like, you know, but I got amazing guests, like some really, really amazing people did my podcast during the pandemic. And then when we came out of the pandemic, I think the last was with Bang Bang, the tattoo artist, maybe a couple after that. But it became very onerous, like getting guests, you know, like it just because now life restarted again. Like during the pandemic, it was very easy. I was just sitting on my ass most of the time sending DMs to people. But when the pandemic ended, I had to see patients and like do, you know, take my kids to school and do all the stuff that, you know, life went back to normal. So just really reaching out to guests became a challenge. So I decided I was going to, you know, let me just start doing like these like direct to camera podcasts. So all of them are unscripted. You know, I literally just sit in front of the camera. Ismail's my producer just sets up the camera and I just talk about whatever we're talking about. You know, he said, you know, he'll ask me like today I walked in, he's like, you got something for the podcast? I was like, yeah, it was something that it was a conversation I had with my 15-year-old daughter this weekend that like something I've been thinking about all week that inspired that. Or the week before that, it was like some shit that infuriated me about insurance companies and how like the most evil companies in the world. And I posted about that, you know. And I'm enjoying these. Like these were firing them up every week. We're just banging it out. Like getting guests, sometimes it would be like a couple of weeks between podcasts. Now it's just like clockwork, you know, like I'll be at 110 weeks, you know, and I'm enjoying it. So now it's more of sort of like just either it's a derm question, which I'll answer, or which we get because we get so many DMs and comments and stuff on all the platforms, or it'll be, you know, like more of like a thoughts of the week where I'm just, you know, something inspired me and I just want to share that, you know, type of thing.
Yeah, that's cool. You kind of have the free space, I guess, to share whatever it is that you, like you said, inspiring you for the week, a conversation that you had, something that's making you frustrated. And then also to have, you want a guest on the show to kind of have that as part of it and really make it your own. That's really cool. And definitely encourage all of our listeners to take a listen to Dr. McGill's podcast and get some life advice, maybe some derm advice. We'll also put that in the show notes along with Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, link to his book is on Amazon, everything like that. So definitely take a look at the doc. Dr. McGill and blow them up for us. Is there anything else you wanted to cover with us? I think that kind of gets through the questions that I had for you in particular.
No, man, we covered it all. Cool. But if anyone has any questions, they can always drop them in a comment or whatever. You can send them to me and I'll fire off a post.
Yeah, send us over an email and we'll get it over to Dr. McGill for sure. But we appreciate you being here with us today, sharing your wisdom, sharing your knowledge. And we hope we can all leave here a little bit more inspired today and let's get it.
Let's get it, man.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the DIGA podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Please send us any questions or comments to derminterestpod@gmail.com.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.